Well, good morning, everybody. How are we doing so far this morning? Come on. Hey, we got an extra hour of sleep last night. Yesterday was Halloween. We're in this creepy series called Strings. I'm so excited to be with you guys this morning. My name is Zach. If I haven't gotten a chance to meet you guys, my wife and I actually get a chance to lead our student res group here at Resonate Church, and we are so excited to get to invest in the next generation of this church. I feel like I always come up here and I always talk about my wife, but I don't feel like some of you guys might not know her. So here's some pictures of us. We actually started dating when we were in high school. Hopefully we'll have a picture. There we go. That's our prom picture, our senior year. Look at that stole cold stunner right there. That's right. That's us, our senior year of high school. We actually went to the same high school, actually had a class together every year, but we didn't always know that. Maybe not, I was a little bit of a jerk and I thought I was cooler than I really was, and that's okay. But we actually got married this past February. So here's us. We had an awesome wedding. Yeah. Been about 8 months. I'm loving it. I love being married. And, you know, we just came out of this series called Love Song about relationships. And I think that we see pictures like this maybe on Instagram, maybe Facebook, maybe Twitter or whatever. And we get to see a snapshot of somebody's life, but we don't necessarily get to see the story that comes behind it. And I think the question that we often ask about people and that are in relationships that are married is, when did you know that you wanted to marry your spouse? And for me, that's a really easy question to answer. So we went to the same high school. I actually was committed to go to a college to play soccer during my junior year. We started dating in our senior year. And let's just say that she followed me there. If I'm being honest with you, I think she was trying to get her MRS degree. You might get that later. You might have just gotten that. But we finished up school in January, and we just got married. But I want to take you back to our freshman year. It's Wofford College. We have a new amount of freedom and a new amount of free time. And honestly, the first semester in college was extremely difficult because we were hanging out a ton. We were always around each other, and ultimately what that ended up leading to was a lot of conflict and a lot of tension. And so I remember that being probably the hardest season of our relationship. We kind of get through that first semester. We're in the second semester. Things are starting to get better. And then I can tell you exactly where I was. On March 21st, 2012, I got a phone call that changed my life. I remember exactly where I was. I was standing on the 10th tee box at the Creek Golf Course. I was playing with my dad and a couple other people. We were playing golf, and I got a phone call when I found out that my best friend committed suicide. A guy who I had been friends with for a couple years, and we were super tight. We probably hung out every single weekend. And I just remember, not knowing how to feel or what to do. And I remember taking a step back and looking up maybe a month and a half to 2 months after that happened. And I just remember, obviously there were so many people, my parents, my friends, my family that were with me the whole time. But I just remember taking a step back and thinking that if Lauren and I had gotten through this and she had been at my side and helped me in the way that she did and spoken words of encouragement, she had made it to where there were people who I needed to hear from, that they got in touch with me. And I remember just taking a step back and thinking, like, if we've been through this, we can make it through anything. This is the woman that I want to marry. And so that event ultimately solidified and strengthened our relationship. But on the flip side of that, that event did just about the opposite in my relationship with Jesus. Because I remember I was sitting beside my best friend the night that he gave his life to Christ. I remember sitting in this auditorium and the pastor's given this invitation. And I remember he had a vice grip on my thigh, which I still to this day don't know why he did, but he did. So I remember, and I just remember waking up the day after I found this out. And I can remember this clearly. I'm in my room. I had gone home and my Bible's laying beside my bed, and I pick it up and I open it. And I closed it shut. I didn't know what I needed to hear, but I just remember opening up the page and just being like, whatever, I'm not going to do this. And then I remember showing up to church that Sunday, and I remember kind of like walking in being like, God, I just need you to speak to my heart. My heart is hurting, my heart is broken, and I don't know what to do, and I don't know how to feel. And so I remember showing up to church, and I remember I was really excited because we had a guest speaker that Sunday at our church, a guy out of Charlotte, North Carolina, one of my favorite pastors was preaching, and I'm kind of like, okay, God, like, you're going to give me some encouragement, you're going to get me through this. And I remember the pastor start speaking, and he was preaching on gratitude. And I can't tell you how much anger was in my heart. I'm sitting here thinking, God, I wanted to hear from you today. I've lost my best friend. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to feel. And you're going to talk to me about being thankful and having gratitude. And I remember halfway through just checking out. And I was like, I'm over it. I just can't do it. And so if me at only 22 years old have experienced something like that, then I know that with the amount of people that we have in this room, there are people who, if you're honest, I know we're not always used to being honest in church, right? But if you're honest, you felt that way. You've been angry at God. You've been confused about what's going on in your life. Maybe you've asked the question, what am I supposed to do when I don't feel like worshiping God? What do I do when I don't feel like following Jesus? Or maybe something as simple as, how in the world am I supposed to worship and have a relationship with a God who is invisible, who I cannot see, who I can't touch, and who I can't always feel? How do we do that? And I think what's so great is that we have a God who loves us and cares for us. And I think that he gives us an answer to this. It's a really, really familiar story. If you've been around church for a little while, you're going to recognize this story. But I'm going to come at it at a little bit different of an angle and see what we're supposed to do when we're angry at God. What are we supposed to do when we don't feel like worshiping God? And how are we supposed to worship God in general? All right, so if you've grown up in church, maybe you've heard this story. It's in John chapter 4. It's called The Woman at the Well. That's what the story's called. And I'm going to give you a little bit of background because I'm not going to start at the beginning. But what happens is Jesus is in one part of Israel, and he leaves there, and he's going to this other part of Israel, and he stops. Ooh, I don't know what that was. He stops in this town of Samaria. Now, he's at the well. It's really hot. You got to realize it's Israel. It's the desert. It's noon, and he walks up to the well, and there's a woman there. Now, it's noon, which means that it's super hot, and the only reason why this woman would have been at the well at this time was because she didn't want to see anybody else. There was obviously something going on in her life that she didn't want to talk to other people. So she starts talking to Jesus, and Jesus eventually says, hey, can you get me a drink? And she says, why would you, a Jew, talk to me, a Samaritan? And he says, if you knew who it was that was talking to you, the gift of God that is standing before you, you would ask of me and I would give you living water. Now that sounds like, what in the world is that? Basically what Jesus is saying is that I have something that is able to satisfy you that you can't get anywhere else. And so she's like, well, that sounds awesome. Like, I want this living water. I won't ever have to thirst again. And she says, can I have some? And he says, go, call your husband and come back. Which sounds like, okay, you know, like she has a relationship, bring her husband. So, but what she says was, I don't have a husband. And you're kind of like, well, isn't Jesus God and he knows all things? So how does he not know she has a husband? And Jesus says, you are right when you say you have no husband, for you have had five husbands and the person you're with now isn't your husband. Now imagine how this woman feels. She's obviously avoiding everybody in her town to go to the well at this time. She meets a man who she's never met before. He offers her something that she could never have access to, and then she finds out that he knows her secret. Can you imagine how she felt? Can you imagine the circumstances? Can you imagine the pressure of this woman who doesn't understand how in the world this man who she's never met knows all of her business, right? And I think that we can relate to this woman because there are times in our life when we just have so much pressure and weight and the circumstances of life are so heavy on us. And that's how I want you to imagine. I want you to take a step into how this woman feels in this story, okay? Because we've all been there. And so right after he says, you've had five husbands, and the one you're living with now, this is what she says. This is where we pick up, John 4, verse 19 through 24. The woman said to him, sir, I perceive that you're a prophet. Yeah, obviously, right? How else would he know that? Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you say that in Jerusalem is the place where people ought to worship. Now, just to tell you, most scholars believe that this woman is actually trying to get Jesus off topic. Basically, he says something, she's like, whoa, we are not talking about that. So I'm going to change the subject, right? Like my students, I think you can relate to this. You all have those teachers who you know there's that subject that if you bring it up, you don't have to do work the rest of the time, right? You know, I remember I was so good at this. What I would do, I would show up the first day of class, and it usually would take me maybe 2 weeks to a month, and I'd figure out what that thing was. Okay, maybe it was their cats. Maybe it was, I had one teacher who was, it was really cool. She was actually taking a week off from work, and she was going to Africa on a mission trip. And all I knew, all you had to do was mention Africa before or after that trip, and we didn't do anything in biology. Side note, that is actually where Lauren and I started having a thing. So I remember that class very vividly, not for the actual coursework. But anyways, so that's what's happening here. And Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. But the hour is coming and is here now when true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father is seeking such people to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth." So basically at the very end of this, when he says God is spirit, all right, that's basically the same statement that I was posing, right? If God is spirit, that means he's not, you know, besides Jesus on earth for 33 years, God is spirit. God is not with us. We don't necessarily see God. And so that begs the question then out of this passage, how do we worship an invisible God? Well, I think that just based on this passage and based on being around Christian communities my whole life, I think there are three myths that we buy into for worship. The first one is that it only happens in church, okay? Think about this, right? Someone asks you, do you believe in God? Are you a Christian? And what do you say? Well, I go to church. You know, might be a CEO, right? Christmas, Easter only, right? A CEO. But what do we say? We say, I go to church. I went to church on Sunday. And so I think what happens a lot of time is that we focus on the context of our worship, but Jesus is focused on the content of our worship, okay? We focus on where we worship, but Jesus is concerned with what or who we worship. You know, our worship pastor, Derek, did a great job last week of talking about the fact that at the bottom line, worship is what we are willing to work our life around. And so even though we might say, I believe in God, I worship God, right, our life gives the evidence of what we actually worship. And so I think we've bought into this idea and this myth that it only happens in church. But we're going to see what Jesus describes as true worship. He's worried about the content. He's worried about what it is that we actually worship. You know, the second myth that I think we buy into is that it's all about ritual. All right, look what happens in this passage. She says, our fathers worshiped on this mountain, but you say, the Jews, that in Jerusalem, which is the temple, is the place where people ought to worship. Now, the reason why that's so important is none of us are Jews living in Israel or Samaritans living in that same area. But what's basically happening is she's saying, our tradition is better than your tradition. And you might be sitting here thinking, well, I'm not a Jew. I've never met a Samaritan. But I think we see this because if someone asks you, are you a Christian? Do you go to church? The next question that usually comes is, well, what denomination are you, right? Oh, well, I'm Catholic, or I'm Baptist, or I'm Presbyterian, or I'm Methodist, or whatever. And we get so focused on who does their religious duties correctly and not who's actually taking steps to follow Jesus and worship him correctly. I'll say it another way. I think that a lot of times we focus on the preferences of our worship, but Jesus is concerned with the person of our worship. And I'll just take a step back and I might even take literally a step back and just say, if we get too concerned with the preferences, I go to the traditional service, I go to the contemporary service, I do this, we do that, you don't do that. I think that if we get so focused on the preferences of our worship and not the person of our worship, I think that ultimately what we end up doing is that we become what we worship. What I want to do, what I want to see. Well, they did that song. They did this. You know. Hey, I'm just going to be really honest with you. Maybe you joined us for a couple of our love song messages, and we opened up every single one of those messages with a song that you could have heard on the radio. And I understand the argument, but there are some people who might be they're like, I don't know why you would do that in church. I don't like that. That's not my preferences. And ultimately, I think we can become so critical about what's going on, what song, what lights, what instruments, what the pastor says, what he wears. Maybe you're mad about my red shoes, and that's okay. These things are awesome. I love these shoes. I had to fight my wife to let me wear them, but I won. Maybe that won't be good later, but I won that one, okay? But we become so worried about our preferences that we miss the fact that we're supposed to be worshiping the person of Jesus. And I think that the last thing, the myth that we buy into is that it's all the same. right? Like someone might ask you, oh, are you a Christian? Do you go to church? And your mentality is, well, you know, I go to church. Maybe you are a CEO. Maybe you go to Christmas, Easter only, and you think that's okay. Or maybe when it comes to the subject of like tithing or giving to God, you're like, well, you know, I'll give a little bit. I'm not going to tithe. And Derek talked to this in a great way last week. He talked about how the fact that we won't always be obedient to Jesus, but we'll kind of throw him a bone, right? Like, I'm not going to do what you want me to do, but I'll do something kind of close, right? And when it comes to worship, if Jesus says that true worshipers will do this, then that means that there is a category of true worship in Jesus' eyes. And on the flip side of that, based on logic, if there's a true way to worship, then that means that there's also a false or an incorrect way to worship. And so I remember the first time I read this passage, I was like, okay, I want to worship Jesus. I want to follow Jesus. What does that actually look like? And so you look in this passage, and it's almost like a little bit cryptic. Jesus says true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. And I remember the first time I read that, and I was like, Jesus, what the heck are you talking about? In spirit and in truth? Can you give me a little bit more than that? Like, you got to read your Bible this many times a week, and you got to listen to this many worship songs a week. No. He says in spirit and in truth. And so even though that sounds like a big, big concept, it's actually really simple. When he's talking about worshiping in spirit, he's talking about passion in your heart for God, right? You think about someone who you might say they're spirited, right? They're excited, they're passionate, they love what they're doing. We see this in school, right? Either homecoming or when you play your rival, you have spirit week, right? And you dress up and maybe you have 70s day or my favorite was James Bond day. I got to come in a tux to school. It's pretty awesome. There's pictures of it in the yearbook, actually. True story. But right, we have spirit. We have this excitement. And so that's what he's talking about. Worshiping in spirit is just passion in your heart. That's worshiping with your heart. And then in truth, he's talking about being properly informed about God in your mind. So what really Jesus is saying here is that true worship is worshiping with your heart and worshiping with your head. And notice that he doesn't say true worshipers will worship in spirit or in truth. He doesn't say you'll worship either with your heart or your head. He says, and. Right? That's the big word. He will worship in spirit and in truth. And the way that I really imagined this was that what essentially what Jesus is saying is that proper balance leads to true worship. Proper balance between your heart, your passion, your excitement for what God has done in your life and is doing around you, and in your head, the promises that he's given us. And so the way that I was thinking about this proper balance is a true worship was a seesaw, right? Because if I try to do, like, say I get really excited about God, and I try to do this, and it's all heart, right? Look at this. This isn't any fun. This is actually, like, really burdensome, because it's like, oh, I'm kind of squatting down, and I'm kind of afraid these slim pants don't, like, split, right? But I wanted to give us a really good picture, so if I'm going to have two of my buddies come up and help me. You guys welcome Zach and Harry to the stage. We got two North Central studs in the house, right? And they're going to show us what it really looks like to have proper balance, right? This is Harry. This is Zach. Woo! All right. So you guys start getting up on this. You start going. Look at this. Look how fun this looks, right? Most of us, we haven't done this since we were like, no hands. I like that. We haven't done this since we were a little kid, right? We don't do this. We kind of look at a seesaw, and normally they're like Fisher Price plasticky, you know? And you're like, if I got on that, I would break it, right? I made sure that this would actually be like, we could use this. So when we picked this up yesterday, me and Ryan actually got on this at 7 in the morning, and we were just doing this for like 5 minutes. It was a lot of fun, right? But so look how much fun they're having. This is the proper balance that leads to true worship, and ultimately that's what Jesus wants for our life. Jesus wants to have joy in our heart. Jesus wants to have joy in our life, and he wants us to know that even though there's kind of a lot of movement going on, there's moving parts just like life, there's lots of moving parts, that even though there's a lot of stuff going on, first of all, they're not going to go anywhere, but also they're having fun. But what's going to happen if you take the heart part out of the equation, right? What happens if somebody gets up off of this? It doesn't work. I mean, Zach's stuck, right? He can't do anything. But Harry gets back on, right? And they get going again, right? And it's all about this proper balance. Look at this. I know. What happens if the other guy gets off? What happens, right? Right? And here's the thing. I want you to see this. This is what happens when things get out of balance. Is that ultimately, a lot of times things start to fall apart, right? When we get so consumed with what's going on around us, and we don't worry, we're not worried about this proper balance between our head and our heart, we fall apart. But look at this. This is just so much fun. Like, I want to do this. And maybe we'll have this in the lobby and we can take turns afterwards. I don't know. All right, you guys give it up for my friends. They're going to head back off the stage. But yeah. Okay, and so here's the point, right? That's fun. That's goofy. But the point is that we can see this tangibly, that if we don't have proper balance, it doesn't work the way that it's supposed to. And I never want to be the Christian that doesn't know what it really looks like to worship Jesus. And I don't want us to be the church that doesn't know this either. And so I think that based on that, I think there are three potential groups of people in the room. The first group, I think, is the group that maybe they need a little more truth in their heart. And here's what I mean by that. Maybe you've recently given your life to Jesus. Maybe in the last week, month, maybe even year, you've given your life to Christ. Maybe you've raised your hand at the end of a service. And it's been a little while, and I remember being here. I remember giving my life to Jesus, and I remember walking out of the auditorium, and it was kind of like, all right, what's next? And ultimately, I remember being in this limbo stage of things until fortunately I got in a group of people that taught me how to follow Jesus. But what do we do? And here's the reason why it's so important, right? We saw that when it gets out of balance, it doesn't work. But if we have a lot of heart, we have a lot of passion for God, but we don't have any real information about God, then what ultimately happens is that our relationship with Jesus becomes an emotion. It's like it's a really, really surface level. It's really emotional, and we have all this excitement for God, and eventually, we burn out. Maybe you've experienced this. Maybe you've given your life to Christ at Resonate recently, and you were super excited about what He did for you. You're super excited for the things of God, being in here and worshiping. And maybe over the past couple weeks or months, maybe that's kind of dried up a little bit. Maybe you come into church and you hear about how a relationship with Jesus is supposed to be filled with joy and excitement. And that doesn't mean that there's not hard times, right? But you're walking in, you're like, I feel kind of dry. I don't understand. Well, more than likely, it's because it's out of balance. And I don't want you in here thinking that, well, to follow Jesus, I have to have a seminary degree or I have to have a PhD on theology. No. This is a very, very big, confusing book, okay? You can say that in church, okay? It's okay to say that, right? But I remember being, hey, just start reading your Bible, right? And I remember opening it up and I read Genesis and it was kind of cool, right? Like God created heaven and the earth in 6 days and on the seventh day He rested. That's pretty cool, right? And then I kept reading, and then eventually I got to this book called Leviticus. Animals started like dying like it was nobody's business, right? Like goats are getting bulls, sparrows. I'm like, why are you killing little birds, man? That's messed up, right? But we look at this book and we're like, what are you talking about in spirit and in truth? What's the truth? Well, what's so great about this book is that it is so full and rich with the promises of God. And that's the truth that I'm talking about. Because here's what I know. One of the promises of God, in John 16:33, Jesus says, in this world you will have trouble. You will have trouble. But take heart. I have overcome the world. And so if one of the promises of God is that sometimes things are going to get a little bit crazy, but I've overcome the world, then how do we step into that overcoming of the world? And because here's what I know. We all need a firm foundation for when crap hits the fan, okay? Because it's going to. In this world, we will have trouble. And so maybe you're in here this morning and you've recently given your life to Jesus and you don't necessarily feel like it or it doesn't feel right. I just want to encourage you with some of these promises of God that you can take hold of. Because in Romans 8:1, it says, there is now no condemnation for those who are in Christ. Maybe you've been feeling that over the last couple days or the last couple weeks that you haven't been able to measure up. There's no condemnation for those that are in Christ. Maybe last night it was Halloween. Maybe you went out hoping to have a good time. Maybe you had a little bit too much fun. I don't really know. And maybe you're sitting here this morning feeling, it feels a little heavy. You know that you stepped over a line that you said you weren't going to step over. But Lamentations 3 tells us that His mercies are new every day. Maybe you don't know. Maybe you've recently lost a job or stepped into a new season of life. Maybe you've had a baby, right? And there's more financial burden than ever before. But in Matthew 6, Jesus is talking to us, and he says that we don't have to worry about anything because Jesus is going to take care of us. He actually says something along the lines of, look at the birds of the air, right? And he says basically to the fact that if he provides for the birds of the air, how will he not also provide for you? That's a promise that we can hold on to. Maybe you've recently started following Jesus, and it doesn't necessarily feel like you're going to be able to keep walking with Jesus. You're like, there's too much on me. There's too much around. I know that this is just going to be a phase that's eventually going to end. Philippians 1:6 tells us that he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion. Okay? And then maybe when I talk about how there's supposed to be joy in your relationship with Jesus, maybe it feels dry and you don't necessarily feel like worshiping Jesus. John 10:10 tells us that the enemy comes to seek, kill, and destroy, but that I, Jesus, have come so you can have life and have it abundantly. And lastly, maybe you're in here and you've been following Jesus and everything, the way that you used to live, you've walked away from. So, and lately, you've been feeling like there's no way I'm not going to get pulled back into that. That the pull to be back into my old way of life is too strong. Well, 1 Corinthians 10:13 tells us that God is faithful and he will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. Maybe you're a teenage guy in here and when in the stillness of the darkness of night, you know that there are those websites that it's really easy to click to and you know that you shouldn't, but you feel that pull and you want to do it so badly. Be encouraged because Jesus said he will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. Right, maybe in your job, your boss has been asking you to do things and cut corners that you know you shouldn't do. And you feel like this pressure is leading you back in this direction. But Jesus says, I will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. Now, unfortunately, I think another myth is that we've taken that verse and we've twisted it into saying, I will not put more on you than you can bear. And that is a lie. Okay? I'm sorry if someone that you know and trusted and loved told you that, but that's not what the Bible says in this passage, right? We know that Jesus said, in this world there will be trouble, there will be tough times. And ultimately, what he's trying to say is, when he's saying, take heart, I've overcome the world, is that there's going to be stuff that you aren't going to be able to be strong enough to deal with. But if you'll hope in me, trust in me, hold on to my promises, then you will. And here's what I know. God's truth allows us to trust. If we will hold on to the promises that are in this book right here, we'll be able to trust that no matter what's going on in our life, that we can give it to Jesus and he's going to come through. Right? Maybe you've been struggling with anxiety, worry, and depression. And this morning, you need to take hold of the fact that in Philippians 4:6-7, it says, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, submit your requests to God. And I think it's easy to sit back and say, well, you know, he's just been preparing for this all week and he's just memorized all that to say that. No. The reason why I have so much in my heart right now of the promises of God is because I've walked in those times of life when I've had to take hold for a firm foundation so that when everything hit the fan, I had something to stand on. Because here's what I know. And we see this happen in day-to-day life, right? But emotion will never sustain your devotion, right? This is why after years of marriage, we'll hear somebody say, I just don't love them anymore. And it's because we've been hoping that our emotion will sustain our devotion, but that's never been the case. And the reason why we need to let God's truth allow us to trust is because God's past provision is the best indicator of his future faithfulness, okay? What God has done in the past is the best pointer to what he's going to do in the future. And here's what I know, and this is something that is just true, and it comes to this balance, but either your feelings will affect your faith or your faith will affect your feelings. And that's why it's so important to take hold of this and to just carve out as many of these promises as you can to hold on to when things get crazy. And so maybe you're in here and as I've been kind of sharing this, you've been thinking, well, you know what, I think I might fall into that category. I think I need to take hold of a little bit more of the promises of God because things have gotten crazy. Some really simple next steps are, when we leave here today, there's going to be a sign out there that says guest services. And there are going to be some simple Bible reading plans. And maybe your next step is today, walk out, grab a Bible reading plan, and start spending 10 or 15 minutes every day just sitting and learning of the promises of God. Maybe you need to get in a res group. Maybe you need a group of people who can come around you like I did to teach me what it looked like to follow Jesus, but to also remind me of those promises when everything hit the fan and it was so crazy. Right? I remember when everything happened with my best friend, I remember somebody sharing a verse with me that I've held on to. And it's Romans 8:28. And it says, "We know this, that he works all things for the good of those who love him and who are called according to his purpose." And I remember hearing that verse and not really knowing what that meant. But over the years, as I've trusted and I've held on to his truth, I've taken steps and I've given him a chance to show me that that's true. And now, what's so awesome is that when we allow God's truth to allow us to trust is when he comes through for us, we have even more to be passionate about. And maybe the last next step is maybe whatever you're struggling with, maybe today you need to go home and you need to Google Bible verse for blank. And you need to write it down on a note card and put it in front of your desk at work. Or maybe you just need to commit it to memory so that whenever things get crazy in the back of your mind, you can, whatever it is, we can spit it back out. But maybe as I've been sharing that, maybe that's not you. Maybe you identified more with the person who feels a little bit dry. And who, maybe you've grown up in church your whole life, but unfortunately when this gets out of balance and we focus more on our head and not feeling not any stirrings or affections towards God in our heart, it leads to a very dry view of God that doesn't bring any joy. And the reason why I say it leads to a view of God is because when we are worried about what we know, it doesn't lead to a relationship with God, it leads to a view of God. And so I want to show you in this story where this happens. I'm going to pick this back up in John chapter 4, 25 and 26, right back up in this passage, okay? Said, "The woman said to him, 'I know that Messiah is coming, he who is called Christ. When he comes, he will tell us all things.' Jesus said to her, 'I who speak to you am he.'" Now imagine this, right? She's standing in front of God, and she starts telling him about God so that he will think nicely of her. This is essentially what's happening here. And I think what happens a lot of times is we get concerned about what we know when Jesus is concerned with who we know, okay? We get so concerned with what we know and what we can do that ultimately what that leads to is a view of God in our head that has no connection in our hearts. And the reason why that's so dangerous is because when this gets out of balance, I can remember this so clearly. Going in, leaving my sophomore year of college, I remember the feeling that I knew that at some point in my life, I was going to be able to, I wanted to be a pastor. I wanted to be in ministry. And I remember what I thought that summer was, I'm going to read the Bible, I'm going to learn all I can, and it's going to help me be able to like speak into people's lives and to do all this, that, and the other. And I remember walking out of that summer, standing on a pedestal, looking down at everyone around me, thinking, "I'm smarter than you, I know better than you, I live my life better than you, and you're not as good as me." And unfortunately, what happens is, when we get this out of balance, what we learn about Jesus doesn't always cause us to become more like Jesus. What we know about God doesn't actually cause us to treat anybody in a way that would make them want to know God. And so I think that what's so cool about this passage is that we get to see that at the end of the day, true worship leads to action. Look what happens near the end of this story, starting in John 4:28. "So the woman left her water jar and went away into town." Pause. Remember at the beginning of this story, she's trying to get away from everybody else? And at this point in the story, once she meets Jesus and she has a proper balance between who she knows, what she knows about God and a passion for God, because she's met him. She has a relationship with him now. She steps back into town. And look at what happens. "And said to the people, 'Come, see a man who told me all I ever did.'" Pause. Who's proclaiming that message? "I've been divorced 5 times. I met a guy who knew it." What? What is that? Right, but because of the relationship that she has with him that leads to true worship here in balance, look what happens. She says, "Can this be the Christ?" They went out of town and were coming to him. And then in verse 39 through 42, we see this. Many Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me all that I ever did. So when the Samaritans came to him, they asked him to stay with them, and he stayed there 2 days. And many more believed because of his word. They said to the woman, "It is no longer because of what you said that we believe, for we have heard ourselves, and we know that this is indeed the Savior of the world." And so what's so cool is that that's the only part of this story that we get to see true worship that comes from proper balance, right? Because at one point in the story, she's resting on what she knows, and then she realizes that what she knows has not been connected to her heart. And as soon as that happens, look at what it says. It says that she immediately left. She immediately goes out, and she's like, I have to tell people. I have to tell people what I've experienced. You know, one of our core convictions at Resonate Church is that it's too good to keep silent. And the only way that we actually go and we live that, that's not a thought in our head, but that's people can see it with our actions, is if what we believe about God, what we know he's done for us, gets connected to what's in our hearts. Because it's not hard to see when somebody is passionate about something. Right, let me give you a really clear example of this. Last week, and I'm going to make some people jealous here, and that's okay. Last week, one of our awesome families in this church invited me to go to a Colts game, which was awesome. Side note, if you ever have any tickets to a really cool sporting event and you want to know, who should I take with me? Okay? All right. So anyways, we're sitting there, and I'm sitting around all these Colts fans who pay a lot of money for these tickets, right? And I mean, honestly, guys, I'm from the South. We like college football more than pro football because it is more godly, okay? That is a joke, but it's based on truth, okay? But right, so I'm there, and honestly, I kind of like the Colts, right? They're not the Steelers or the Patriots or anybody who, like, Satan, you know, is like, woo, right? If you're a Steelers or a Patriots fan here, I'm sorry, but we're talking about truth today, okay? All right? And so I'm sitting there, and honestly, I have a little bit of invested interest because I have Andrew Luck and Frank Gore on my fantasy team, which has not meant good things for me this year, okay? But so I'm sitting there, and I know a little bit about the teams, and I'm kind of excited, right? Like, the stadium's awesome, and it's not my first NFL game, but it was still really awesome to be there. And I remember the moment when I realized that I wasn't as passionate as the people around me. And what happened was, it was in the first quarter, 0-0, and it was really funny. The Colts fans booed for like the whole first half, which was really entertaining to me. But there was this one play. It's fourth down. It's 0-0, and the Saints have the ball. And it's like fourth and like two or something, and they're on like maybe the 25-yard line. And they line up to do the field goal, right, and they snap it. Quarterback grabs that sucker. It's a fake, and he rolls out here, and he launches it down the field, and the dude, like, catches it, and he, like, ends up down at the 1 yard line. I'm like, whoa, that was sick, and everyone around me is just like, no, I hate this, and I'm like, oh, I'm not as passionate about this as the people around me, okay? And so I think that it's easy for us to see when there's passion, but let me ask you this question. Would the people that you interact with on a daily basis know that clearly that you're passionate about Jesus? Because here's what I know. We want to be a church that is known for people who just love Jesus and that invite people just like this woman. And notice what's crazy about this woman is that, one, it's not like she's the perfect person, right? Think about this woman's story. But because she's met Jesus, she's willing to pull people into this relationship. Also, I don't think this always gets talked about, but she says, come see a man who told me everything I ever did. She kind of got that wrong. He didn't do that. He mentioned one thing. And so I think one of the excuses, the two excuses that we make the most, and I do this too, trust me, I do this too, sitting in my cubicle at work, I make these same excuses, is either one, I don't know enough, or two, I'm not good enough. And if Jesus can use this woman and this story to impact a whole city, then what could he do with the people in this room just striving and fighting to get the proper balance between their head and their heart? And here's what I want to say. You know, if you find yourself and, you know, maybe you feel like, you know, I'm dry. Maybe I feel like I know a lot, but I don't necessarily, and I'm never excited about what Jesus is doing. Then I just want to give you some really practical next steps to step into that. The first one is, one, take a step back and really contemplate, has there ever been a time when you've surrendered your life to Jesus? Because it's easy to know a lot And the more you know, I think the harder it is to submit to him. That's the first one. That's a really easy one. But maybe you say, yeah, you know what, Zach, there's been a time when I've given my life to Christ. Then simply what you can do is just figure out what stirs your affection for God and do it a lot, okay? And here's the thing. That's going to be different between me and my wife. That's going to be different between me and Davey. That's going to be different between me and you. For some people, you might just have to, you know, figure out some of these songs that we sing on a Sunday, download them on your iPhone, and just crank them up in your car. Right, but there are actually also people who really do get stirred up for God from reading his word. I have a friend who I met in college. He's one of the smartest people I know. He's in like Turkey right now studying abroad. He's about to go to Israel. Okay, this guy like stood up beside me at my wedding. And he really does get really excited about the things of God when he reads about them in God's word. But I don't know what that is for you. It could be something totally different. But find what that is and do it, because it's all about proper balance. And we never want it to get out of balance, because then it doesn't work. The second thing you can do is to step in and start serving. And you might be thinking, okay, here we go. We got another guy trying to get me involved at church. But here's what I want you to know. We're in John 4 right now, okay? The only miracle that we've seen so far in the book of John is recorded as the first miracle that Jesus does is when he turns the water into wine and he makes all the Baptists angry and the Presbyterians happy, okay? If you didn't get that joke, that's a church joke. Don't even worry about it, okay? All right? But what we see in this story is Jesus and his crew are at a wedding, okay? And he's just hanging out. You know, he was just going and he was hanging out. And somebody, they run out of wine. That's how you know it's a party, okay? They run out of wine and they come up to Jesus' mother and she says, go up to Jesus and whatever he tells you to do, do it. And so the servants, there's a couple servants who are there. They're basically like the people serving the food, right? At a traditional, like the weddings that we know. It's the person in the white shirt and the black pants, right? Sir, would you like this crab puff, right? Okay. Maybe if you're lucky, it's something with sugar in it, okay? But they walk up to Jesus and he says, you see those big jars over there? Go fill them up with water. They do that. They bring them to Jesus and he says, go and give them to basically like the DJ, so he can tell everybody what happened. So they bring him to the DJ. DJ takes a sip of the wine. They're like, man, this is awesome wine. You know, most of the time people they start with the good wine, and then once they've had a little wine, they bring out the bad wine because they don't know, okay? But he's like, you've done the opposite, right? And in that story, what's so cool is that the people who were willing to serve were the ones that got the front row seat to the miracle. And here's what I know. If you will just take a step and get involved, you might think, I can't sing, I can't play an instrument. Me either, okay? All right, but there is something that you can do in this church that you're going to get connected to, and when we see people raise their hand and receive Christ, or we see people take next steps in baptism or whatever it is, you're going to have a front row seat clapping and cheering what Jesus is doing. And there's no way that you're not going to be able to feel passionate about God when you get to see him work in ways that some people think only happens in the Bible. Or maybe, you know, this was really crazy. This summer I was transitioning out of substitute teaching and coaching, and I took a new job, and it was going to be a job in a warehouse. I was going to be dirty. I was going to be sweating. It's South Carolina. It's 100 degrees. And I'm not really looking forward to starting this job, because here I am thinking, Jesus, I know that I want to do this. I know that I want to be doing what I'm doing right now, but I have to go and work lifting up heavy stuff all day. Are you kidding me? And I remember I'm coming. I had to drive to another city a little bit away to go to this job. And I remember I come up the exit ramp. And as I come up the exit ramp, I see this building. Now, so most of you guys, what you're like, that looks like some sort of old grocery store. That's what that was. That was an old buy low, okay? And to you, that might not look like anything, but I remember I came up that hill and I see this building. And all of a sudden, I'm kind of frustrated. I'm kind of discontent with where God has me. And I remember him very gently, very, very tenderly saying, hey, do you remember who you were before you stepped into that building? Now, some of you are like, what are you talking about? You went to Bilo and your life got better? No. That was a Bilo, and it closed. And then this crazy church called New Spring Church decided that they wanted to open up a second location 30 minutes away, 45 minutes away from where they did church, and they wanted to stream a live video feed. And really at this point, guys, this was like 8 or 10 years ago, people did not do this, okay? And they decided, we're going to go into this other city to see if people can meet Jesus there. And honestly, when you hear that, you're like, that's never going to work. Well, I drove 45 minutes to go to that building. And I remember the day on April 19th, 2009, where I stood up and gave my life to Christ in that building. And so if you're a Christian in here, there's been a time when you've been able to see this happen in your own life. You can point back to, this has been the time when I've given my life to Christ. There's no way that when things are going on in your life that seem too much, that you can't worship. Because you can look back to, you might think, I'm not where I want to be, but fortunately, by God's grace, you're not where you used to be. And so, here's the thing. I think a lot of times inside of a Christian culture, you can grow up in church and kind of the thing is, well, I've always been a Christian. I've always gone to church. I've always done this, that, and the other. But how crazy would it be if I stood up here and I said, you know, I've just kind of always been married to Lauren. Like, they're like, oh, so you didn't have like a wedding day? You're like, no, we were like born. And our parents were like in the same place and they decided they will forever be married. You'd be like, who are your parents? I want to punch them in the face. That's the weirdest thing I've ever heard, right? When it comes to following Jesus, there has to be a time when we remember, and you might not know the exact place or the right time, but you know that there was a season of life when you decided, that's what I want to surrender my life to Jesus. And so I'm going to have the band come up here really quickly. You can just kind of ignore what they're doing behind me. But if this has ever happened in your life, if there's ever been a time when you've given your life to Christ, then I want you to know that that's always something that we can worship. And lastly, I want to close with this story. So like I said, my wife and I serve with students. And I remember this spring sometime, I was at a Wednesday night service. And I see this kid from across the room. And he has on a shirt that says like, a certain high school soccer. So I know, okay, I've never seen this kid before. I'm just going to walk up. I'm going to introduce myself. And there was just something about this kid that just drew me to him. I didn't know what it was. And so I walk up to him like, hey, man, my name's Zach. I saw your shirt. You know, the school where he went to, the coach who's there now, used to coach it where I went to school and was coaching. And I was like, hey, man, like, what's your name? He's like, my name's TJ. So I meet TJ, and I come to find out later that night that TJ's older sister is in my wife's small group. And what's crazy is that his sister, Allison, had his family had never gone to church. She got invited to this church. She came. She prayed to receive Christ, and she immediately had this, she just wanted to see her parents and her brother come to know Jesus. And so she finds out from Lauren that I meet her brother, and she is super intentional, like, you've got to get to know him. You've got to spend time with him. You've got to invest in him. But honestly, I just liked this kid for no reason, and so it wasn't a big deal. So we started hanging out. He would come over to our apartment. We played FIFA. You know, we would go kind of kick the soccer ball around. I had that in common with him. And, you know, we'd go, you know, go get some food, or we'd go, you know, we went to a fun park. We played like laser tag. We're doing all kinds of stuff. And I'm getting to know TJ, and I'm getting to learn his story. And like I said, he had never grown up in church. He didn't know anything about it. But as we continued to hang out, TJ started asking more questions. And every time we'd hang out, I'd make it a point to ask him at least one time, hey man, like, what's going on in your heart? What's going on in your mind? Who do you believe that Jesus is? And every time we'd continue to talk, you could see he was getting closer. He was getting closer. And it wasn't something where it was like, you need to do this right now. Like, blah, blah, blah. I was just like, I'm going to let TJ come to Jesus when it's his time. And I remember, you know, can I just be honest with you guys? This is going on at the time when I come up here and preach in July. And I'm preaching on what it looks like to invest in people. And I'm preaching about the fact that we need to patiently invest in people, because sometimes it takes up to 18 months for someone to trust you enough to come to church. And so as I'm preaching this, from this stage, there's discontent in my heart because I'm trying not to trust that truth and trust that God can do what he says he's going to do. And so this continues to happen. And honestly, I remember preparing for that sermon. And right now I'm like, TJ is going to come to know Jesus. I'm going to get to share that from this stage. It's going to be awesome. But TJ doesn't come to know Jesus in time for it. I'm like, that's okay. And I convince him to go to the Gauntlet, right? If you've been to Gauntlet, went to Gauntlet X. Let me hear some noise. Who's been to Gauntlet? All right. That was way too weak, but we're going to leave it at that. So TJ doesn't want to go to the Gauntlet. And I'm like, TJ, you've got to go. It's going to be a lot of fun. And here's the thing. I knew who was assigning rooms. And so I knew that TJ would be in my room if he went. But we're not really supposed to tell people that, okay? So I'm doing, TJ's like, I don't want to go. What if I don't know anyone? What if you're not my room leader? And eventually I'm like, look, TJ, I'm going to be your room leader if I have to fight the whole church and the pastor too, okay? You're going to be in my room. You're going to have a good time. Come and trust me. And so TJ comes, and we ended up having a great room. We had TJ who played soccer. We had two guys who I coached there, and another guy who went to another high school who played soccer. And so we're having a great time. You know, maybe we're getting the campus safety called on us because we're playing soccer in the room at 11:30. Maybe that happened. Maybe it didn't. Not advocating it, but it happened, okay? And we're having a great time. And then Wednesday night, and if you were at the Gauntlet, you know what happened Wednesday night. Okay, and if you weren't, let me tell you what happens. The pastor gets up on stage, he preaches for about 40 minutes, and his invitation is very simply, if you need to give your life to Christ, grab your room leader and go out. And what happened next was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. We saw students for 50 minutes getting out of their chairs and walking to receive Christ. And I'm sitting in the very back. Okay, the auditorium was set up as this big U, and there's like 6,000 people in this arena. And I'm seeing literally hundreds of students coming out and hundreds of students receiving Christ. And I'm seeing students who I know come to know Christ, but TJ is still sitting beside me. And I remember I just looked at him. I said, TJ, do you need to go and talk? He said, no. I said, okay. So this continues to happen, and literally, I'm not exaggerating when I say this happened for 50 minutes. Okay, and this keeps happening, and I can literally see TJ physically fighting, not wanting to go. And so I'm sitting in the back, I'm seeing all this happen, and I'm wanting to worship, but I didn't feel like it. And I remember the feeling as I honestly felt like I was gonna throw up. Because what I had been so desperately praying for, I wasn't getting to see happen when I wanted to see it happen. And so at one point, my head's down. I don't know what I was doing, but my head's down, and somebody taps me on my shoulder, and I look, and it's TJ. And for a moment, I'm like, this is it. And he points over, and another guy who had come with us, his name was Kevin. He was a guy I had coached for 2 years. I actually had to have a conversation with his parents translating because they didn't speak English if he could come on this trip, and he wanted to. And Kevin and I walk outside, and he's like, you know what, Zach? I grew up in church my whole life, and this whole week I've been fighting it, but there's never been a time when I've given my life to Jesus. And so right there, Kevin prays to receive Christ. And in that moment, I didn't care. I knew that I was celebrating, and I was so excited about what was going on. And we get our group, and we're walking back to the hotel. And you got to understand, we're downtown Daytona. There's literally thousands of people walking back to their hotels. It's chaos, okay? And TJ comes up beside me, and he goes, hey, I want to talk in the room when we get back. And so we go out on the balcony, and we talk for at least 30 minutes. And in that moment, TJ prayed to receive Christ. And the next day, I actually have a picture of it. Yeah, we can celebrate that. The next day, I got a chance to see TJ and Kevin give their lives to Christ. And it's that picture, it's that moment imprinted in my mind that I always go back to when I wonder, can Jesus come through? Can he do this? Can he do what I need him to do? And I always go back here. And if he was faithful here, he's going to be faithful there, okay? And so just in a moment of just personal reflection, I want everyone to close their eyes and bow their heads. And maybe you're in here, and the third group of people in this room are people that are like TJ, who maybe you've never been to church, you have no information about God in your head, and you have no passion for him in your heart, and that's okay. Because when we meet the woman in this story, she doesn't either. She's trying to find everything else in the world that can satisfy her. But when she realized that only Jesus could satisfy her, she put her hope in him, and everything changed. Or maybe you're like my friend Kevin, who had grown up in church. He had done everything that he was supposed to do, but he never actually surrendered his life to Jesus. If that's you in this moment, and you know that there's never been a time when you've prayed to receive Christ, when you've given your life to him, then I'm going to give you a chance right now. And it's very simple. All I'm going to do is I'm going to lead you in a prayer. And in your heart, but declaring to God, I want you to pray this prayer after me. And it's not a prayer that saves you. It's what's going on in your heart and your surrendering of yourself to Jesus that's going to save you. Pray this prayer in your heart right now. Jesus, thank you for bringing me here this morning. Jesus, thank you for the fact that you gave your life on the cross for us, that you shed your blood for me, that my sin had separated me from you, and you loved me enough to bring me back to you. Jesus, I give you my life. I surrender my life to you right now. I lay it down. My life is not my own. Jesus, help me to live my life, the rest of my life, for you. Amen. Now, with your head still bowed and eyes still closed, if you just prayed that prayer, you know, we see this woman in this story. She meets Jesus and she immediately goes and she tells the whole city. Well, I'm not going to ask you to do that. But so that you can take a step and publicly declare that Jesus is Lord, I want you, if you just prayed that prayer, to raise your hand right now with nobody looking, with heads still bowed and eyes still closed. If you just prayed that prayer, put your hand up in the air. And I'm not going to poke and I'm not going to prod, but you know who you are. And if you just prayed that prayer, just very, very quickly, just stick your hand up in the air. Amen. All right, I'm going to pray for everyone in this room right now. Jesus, thank you for the fact that today people crossed over from death to life. Jesus, I pray for those people who just gave their lives to Christ. Maybe they had the courage to raise their hand, and maybe they didn't, Lord, but you know who they are. And Lord, I pray that this week that you would show them your promises so they could step into them in a way that they've never thought they could before. Jesus, I pray for everyone in this room that we would walk out of here today willing to fight to get our worship in the proper balance between our head and our heart, so that our worship would lead to action and our action would lead to people coming into this place, hearing about Jesus, Lord. Lord, I pray for the students who know that this is how they need to live their lives at their schools. Lord, I pray for the people, including myself, that know that this is how we need to live our lives in, with our heads and our hearts locked into you at our works, Jesus. Jesus, I pray that our faith would impact our feeling, and that even when we didn't feel like worshiping you, that we'd step out, we'd be willing to serve those at our work, we'd be willing to serve our spouse and our children, Jesus, and that ultimately you would get the glory, that we would get the joy, and the world would get the good. It's in your name I pray, amen. Now hey, we're about to sing one more song, and I want everyone, when we, in just a moment, I want you just to stand up. And we're going to sing a song about what it looks like to fight to follow Jesus, to fight to get our life in the proper balance, to worship him in a way that leads to people coming to know him. So right now, go ahead and stand up. We're about to sing this song.